call the meeting of the zoning board of appeals to order. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Chairman Martin.
Here.
Mr. Bernie.
Here.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Here.
Mr. Lucchese. Ms. Schutagel.
Not here.
Mr. Smetana. We have four.
Okay, so we have a quorum. The first matter on the agenda this evening is the approval of our minutes from the meeting of April 8th. Anybody had an opportunity to review these? If they want to make a motion to approve them?
I'll make that motion.
Second, any discussion? I'll call the roll, please.
Of the members who were present on April 8th, Chairman Martin. Mr. Bernie.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yeah.
Then we have minutes from our meeting on May 20th. Did not have a quorum that evening, but we still conducted an informal meeting. And I'm advised that we need to take the minutes up and have them approved. So anybody that was here wants to make a motion to approve these minutes.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it. Any discussion? I want to call the roll.
Those present on May 20th, Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
All right. The next matter on the agenda is an appeal from the decision of the zoning administrator with regard to the property at 138 and 142 Keystone and the ability to maintain enclosed parking spaces on each property. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask whoever's here on behalf of the applicant and whoever wants to address the board on this issue, if you'd stand up and get sworn in now, and we'll proceed.
Please raise your right hand. To those who will testify at this public hearing, you are reminded that the River Forest Village Code makes it unlawful for any person to knowingly make a false statement of material fact to the village in connection with any application, report, affidavit, oath, certification, or attestation. Violations are punishable as a petty offense with a fine. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will give true testimony relative to the matter before the Zoning Board of Appeals?
I do.
Right. Thank you. If you to introduce yourself and make your presentation, that'd be fine.
Yeah, my name is Stuart Weiner. I'm the owner of 138 Keystone. I also own 142 Keystone. Sorry for my attire. I'm coming straight from my daughter's softball game. We've lived there about 8 years. It's a home we're going to live in for the next 20 or 30. There's a garage in our backyard that is ready to be removed. We're hoping to have more green space, not only for us. There's 30 kids on the block that all are over at our house all the time. Frankly, it's just an aesthetic thing, and again, trying to get more green space, more of a backyard. We want to take the garage down in our backyard, put a three-car garage on 142. We will park our cars there, and we've got plenty of off-street parking, which I understand is the purpose and intent of that rule, to maintain a garage. That's really all I have to say. I assume the materials are there. They show the drawings, the plat, everything there.
So you made a request to the zoning administrator to advise you whether or not it was proper to build one three-car garage after you took the two-car garages down. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the zoning administrator said that wasn't permitted under the code.
Correct.
And that's the decision of the zoning administrator that you're asking us to deal with this evening. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
All right. Anything else you want to tell us?
You know, I know Cliff probably made the right decision. He's made that decision 100 times, maybe. I think we're in a unique position where we own the property right next door. We're not intending to sell it. We're not intending to do anything with it other than continue to rent it out. If the purpose of the rule is to have off-street parking, we've got plenty of it. I would like to know what the intent of the rule is, if that's not the intent of the rule.
Okay. So at this point, we're gonna excuse you, and someone from the village is gonna discuss this with us.
Cliff, do you want to review the?
Then we'll give you a chance to speak again. I think he had a soft clog.
I let him know he didn't have to leave.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, we didn't mean you had to leave.
The R1 and the R2 zoning districts share the same requirement for off-street parking, which in for the R2 district with section 10.9.8, it refers you back to section 10-8-8. In which reads, in the R1 district, no building may be erected unless it shall be provided with two enclosed parking spaces for passenger automobiles, which are not in required open yards, unless such enclosure is a detached garage, which may occupy no more than 30% of the rear yard. Essentially, it requires that every time a new house is built on a lot, that it comes along with two enclosed parking spaces. There are probably a few lots in the village where there were houses that were built before the zoning ordinance or before automobiles and still don't have a garage for two enclosed parking spaces. But in my tenure here with the village, I've always been informed that the purpose was to maintain those two enclosed parking spaces. So we have, anytime someone comes in with a permit for a permit application to demolish an existing detached garage, we're always looking, oh, is there a plan to replace those two enclosed parking spaces? And there's often been a number of times where people have said, well, my garage is in poor condition and I want to demolish it, but I don't have the money to replace it, or some other excuse. We've always done our best to enforce the requirement that they maintain the two enclosed parking spaces. And, that's what we've always done as long as I've been here. And as far as I know, in my predecessor's time, it was always done that way.
So, Cliff, did you make the decision on this application?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So, is there anything else you want to tell us?
This is an unusual case where one owner has two lots side by side. Each are lots of record. Each have a dwelling unit on them. They are independent lots of record. He could sell either one of them tomorrow if he wished. At which point you're left with a situation where possibly one lot has a house with a three-car garage and the other house is a house that has no enclosed parking spaces. If there isn't a requirement to maintain the two enclosed parking spaces, someone could, for whatever reason, you know, decide that they could build a new house tomorrow with a garage, and the day after the certificate of occupancy is granted, they could immediately file a demolition permit to remove the garage for whatever reason. So.
Carmen Martin.
Oh, sorry, that's Carmen Forte. Carmen is the attorney assigned to the zoning board tonight. He's unable to be with us in person, but he has joined us remotely.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairman Martin and members, for having me this evening. I'd like to echo the statements of Mr. Raddatz. They are correct and directly on point. We've reviewed this issue as well, and we do agree. The owner's interpretation of accepted would as Mr. Raddatz said, allow a single family home to be built with two covered parking spaces, and then at any time thereafter, the garage could be demolished, leaving no covered parking on the lot, which does not meet the intent of the zoning ordinance. So the village has historically and consistently interpreted this section, both for R1 and R2 zoning districts, to require those. So as long as the dwelling is on the residential property, there has to be two covered parking spaces on the property. The interpretation follows the plain language of the zoning code or ordinance, and in the intent of the village. And the reason behind it is in order to keep parked vehicles off village streets and ensure residential properties are developed with adequate off-street parking facilities. So it's our opinion that the zoning administrator's interpretation is correct. We agree with it. A ruling opinion otherwise would really be to disregard the plain language of the zoning ordinance. The one last point is that if there is a motion to overturn the zoning administrator's interpretation or ruling, it would require 4 affirmative votes. So everyone present this evening would have to vote in favor of that motion for it to be successful. The ruling that you make this evening is final and appealable to Circuit Court.
Chairman Martin, do you want Carmen to explain the role of the ZBA in these matters? Or?
No.
Okay.
Anything else you wanted to say something, Lisa?
So I would just say that I would care to weigh in on that then, I guess. The role of the ZBA in these matters is to determine whether or not the zoning administrator has incorrectly interpreted the ordinance.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
I have just one question. Is this other house occupied? You rent it out, so there are tenants.
Yeah.
So your intent would have been to let the tenants utilize the garage also?
Yeah. So we will have cars in covered parking, and we will...
It would be easier if you would mind going back up there again so we can we're recording it.
Yes, the intent is to share the garage with the renter of the other property, and all cars will be in a covered lot. It's just that it's not on the 138 property.
But it's 3 cars, not 4.
That is true.
For those members who are here tonight, because we record the meetings and because they are recorded on Zoom, if you could try to speak into your microphone as much as possible, that would be appreciated.
Okay. Anything else that you want to tell us or ask us?
No, I mean, you've heard it a couple of times. The intent is to have off-street parking and parking in covered spots. We meet those criteria. I have 40 pictures of houses with cars that are parked at the end of their driveway, not parked in garages. So if that's the intent of the rule, it's not working. Okay, you've got rules for off-street parking already. You've got rules that you can't park on the grass. I don't know why there's a rule that says you have to park in a garage or you have to have a garage that you're not going to park in. So I think that's more my point. I know Cliff has helped me a lot with this, and I'm sure it's an accurate interpretation of the rule. I just wonder what the intent of the rule is there, and I'm hoping we can let logic prevail.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Anybody else in the audience want to address the zoning board on this matter? So we'll close the public portion of the hearing, and we'll discuss, and we will decide how we want to deal with this appeal. Anybody got any questions?
No.
Ron, Dave? All right, somebody want to make a motion?
The way we go,
I think we ought to make a motion. The way to make the motion would be that we move to reverse the decision of the zoning board of the administrator. I think that should be the first motion.
If the intent is
to second Dave's motion,
I think Chairman Martin, if the intent is to reverse the interpretation of the zoning administrator, that is the proper motion. If the intent is to affirm it, it would be to affirm the interpretation of the zoning administrator.
All right. So let's first address whether or not we want to reverse the zoning board, the zoning administrator's decision. So I'll make that motion. Is there a second? Okay.
You make a motion to... Frank, what's your motion right now?
My motion is to reverse the decision of the zoning administrator.
Okay.
Is there a second? Okay, so that's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All right, you want to call the roll?
Mr. Lucchese?
No.
Mr. Dombrowski?
No.
Mr. Burney?
No.
Chairman Martin?
No. Okay. So, Mr. Forte, is that all we have to do, or do we need a motion to affirm the decision?
You should make a motion to affirm the decision for formality's sake, right, since that's the intent this evening.
All right. Somebody want to make a motion to affirm the decision of the zoning administrator?
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second? Any discussion? All right. You want to call the roll?
Chairman Martin?
Yes.
Mr. Burney?
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski?
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese?
Yes.
All right, so the decision of the zoning administrator will be affirmed. Thank you for coming tonight. All right, the next matter on the agenda this evening is to continue our discussion of the potential of ADUs in the village. So again, anybody who wishes to address us on that matter, we'd ask that you would stand and get sworn in, please.
You all have heard the admonition. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will give true testimony relative to the matter before this Zoning Board of Appeals?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So we had a meeting last month, and there was a presentation made to us about ADUs, what they are, where they are currently, what restrictions are on them, if any. And the purpose of tonight is to continue that discussion, see if there's any additional input for us to consider. And then we can decide whether we're ready to start making recommendations to the village board or to our attorney to draft some language for the village board to consider. So we're going to, if you would introduce yourself again, because you don't look the same as you did on the Zoom, and then...
I'd like to think I look a little bit better in person.
Tell us...
Or maybe the camera hides everything. Who knows? Yeah. Well, good evening, Zoning Board of Appeals. Thank you for having me tonight. I'm very excited to be here in person to see all of your beautiful faces. Last time I was just staring at my presentation and myself, so I love seeing your faces instead. My name is Jamie Jackson. I am a senior planner at the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, also known as CMAP. Unfortunately, my colleague Jake Side, who is leading this project, could not be here tonight due to another conflict. So I will be taking the lead on tonight's presentation and workshop discussion. So to start off tonight's evening, click. Okay. First, we're going to review the presentation that was given in May, and then do a workshop to see what your ideas are for how ADUs fit in with River Forest. I would be remiss not to go over onto 2050 and who CMAP is. CMAP is the Regional Planning Agency for Northeastern Illinois. We represent 7 counties and 284 municipalities. You may be familiar with our Regional Comprehensive Plan Onto 2050, and the 3 principles of Onto 2050 are resilience, inclusive growth, and prioritized investment. We've learned that these 3 principles have quite a bit of resonance with the work we've done here in River Forest. And one of the ways that CMAP helps to implement the goals of our comprehensive plan is by partnering with communities like River Forest. Through our technical assistance program, we complete projects that support strategic economic development, build local government capacity, and support sustainable and equitable development. So now that we have that out of the way, let's go through what we discussed back in May. So first I gave a presentation dubbed ADUs 101, which really just gave a broad overview of accessory dwelling units, generally defined as a second dwelling unit on a single family residential lot with a full kitchen and bathroom. It is recommended that ADUs would be part of the village as part of the 2020 River Forest Affordable Housing Plan. And as part of the discussion, we looked at characteristics of ADUs, how that they're generally used, and how they may be applicable to the village. Topics also included multi-generational housing, community character, affordability, and aging in place. Currently, at least 8 communities in the Chicago region permit ADUs in some form, and another half dozen or so are having similar discussions like we're having this evening. We had a great panel of experts. We had Sarah Flax from Evanston, Craig Thaler, Oak Park's village planner, and then David Schwartz, the founder of Chicago Granny Flats. And one thing that they talked about was an incremental approach to ADUs. Evanston started out with just permitting them. They had a lot of non-conforming uses as far as ADUs goes. People had a lot of existing coach houses. Their first step was just making those conforming. And then from there, they continued to add on and amend their ordinance to the point now where they allow ADUs in every single zoning district, residential, commercial, doesn't matter. Oak Park currently only allows ADUs in detached structures, so a coach house. But they are currently looking at amending their ordinance and expanding the applicability of ADUs on a single family lot. And because of this incremental approach to ADUs, growth has been slow and the impacts have been relatively minimal. To reiterate, Evanston has only had 10 new ADUs since 2019. Oak Park had less than 10 since 2017. So it's a rate of 3 to 4 built a year. There's also the financial aspect of it. Mr. Schwartz quoted the new price of an ADU for a basement unit was around $75,000. A detached structure, however, can run upwards of $200,000. So it's a pretty significant financial burden for a homeowner to invest in an ADU. And again, this has limited the impacts of ADUs as they've come into communities. So with that, I'm just going to pause and see if there's any discussion or questions based on the recap of May's discussion. Okay.
Why don't you let there's a few other people here who want to discuss this. So why don't you let us hear them and then we'll come back.
Absolutely.
You want to call?
Yeah, Ryan Gilbert.
Sorry, I'm not used to this process.
That's okay.
All right. Good evening. My name is Ryan Gilbert. This is my partner, Amy, and we are homeowners in River Forest, and we are also small business owners. Our small business, though, we have an office downtown, and also because of COVID in the past year and a half, as everybody's been affected by it, we have also been affected by it. We've had to expand our at-home work capabilities quite a bit. We're in the multimedia industry. We do TV commercials. So there's lots of gear that I have. And even though it's just the two of us, we're starting to trip over ourselves at the office because we work together. And we have, luckily enough, on our lot, we do have a two-car garage up the coast. But we have thought in years past about expanding upon it to make a like an artist loft up there, thinking it would be a really nice way to work from home but not feel like we're at home. And quite honestly, it would force me to get out of my pajamas when I got to work at that point. So the secondary, you know, the home office building above the garage would allow us to grow the business that is growing right now. And we're very fortunate for that, even though there are some, you know, tough times and businesses have been closing. Ours is not. And we all along had kind of thought about putting in a little kitchenette and a bathroom just so we didn't have to run to the house every time we wanted a beverage or to use the facility, not knowing that that was against the code. So that was kind of our thoughts, you know, was to eventually build up on the garage and have a nice little artist studio. And let's be honest, it's probably just for my mom when she comes in town. But we didn't think it was, it wasn't going to be exploited for anything outside of those, you know, home uses, business uses. And we honestly thought it would just improve our property value. And so we just kind of thought it was a win-win if we could afford it, that is, to Jamie's point about it being very expensive. I mean, we did look into it, not very seriously, but we did examine it a little bit and realize the costs are higher than we thought. But it is still a goal of ours. So we would be very interested in the idea of it down the road if this makes it past the discussion. And I think that's it. I'll yield my time back. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I leave now. All right.
Dan Lauber is asked.
Hello,
and sure. Well, we also have Chairman Crosney from the Plan Commission.
Why don't you come up? Yeah.
Good evening. So again, I'm David Crosby. I'm the chair of the Plan Commission, and I thought it'd be helpful if I kind of gave you some context as to where this discussion has been before before it has arrived at your committee. So the Plan Commission is similar to you all, where we have seven residents that volunteer their time. Last year, we were asked to put together an affordable housing plan. And so we met, I think it was maybe four or five times. Mm-hmm. And I think four of those times we worked with a consultant to put together the draft. We reviewed it, and then we had open discussion with the community, got feedback, revised it, and so we did that four or five times. We then took that document, our affordable housing plan, and sent it to the trustees. They then had an open discussion and with the public, and then voted to approve the affordable housing plan. So, you know, this document is really a framework, and so there are components in it that are now being sent out to committees like yourself, and in this case, accessory dwelling units. And so this has been sent to you all to drill down and get into the minutia and the details of it to evaluate it. What I learned through this process is that, you know, River Forest, we are completely built out. We don't have land where a developer can go and build a subdivision and we can say, okay, let's put some affordable housing in that. We're built out. So in the R1 and R2 district, it's really difficult to inject any kind of affordable housing into those areas. So right now, really North Avenue, our boundaries, North Avenue, Madison, Harlem, and Lake, that's where the bulk of affordable housing exists now. And it's, you know, and that's, you know, as far as planning, it's easier in a sense because you have mixed use buildings that they can get affordable housing into. So that's really where this came about, pursuing an accessory dwelling unit. In our plan, this is the overarching kind of concept is going with using bonuses for developers, and again in those corridors. But then we go into possible additional considerations, and that's where we say explore amending the zoning ordinance to accommodate accessory dwelling units as a conditional use in R1 and R2 districts. So we put that in there as a way to help our residents really be able to live in River Forest from, you know, say we're out of college all the way through retirement. And so the types of people that we saw that could benefit from this are seniors who want to age in place. Opportunity Knox, that's an organization that works with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. They, at our meetings, are very supportive and excited about this idea because they saw this as an opportunity that could really help the people that they serve. But we're talking about teachers, village staff, police, fire department, that fall into that where their income is in the affordable housing range that is dictated by this document. Lastly, recent college students, where they would have a place that they could stay, they could afford to begin their careers in River Forest. So those are the types of people that we were thinking about when we inserted the accessory dwelling unit into the affordable housing plan. Okay, that's it. I just wanted to give you some context. That's how we got to this point. And I'll, you know, if you want to ask me questions now, or I can stick around and answer them later.
I have a question. So what percentage of our housing is affordable, and what is the measure of what's affordable housing and not affordable?
Sure. So right now, River Forest, according to the state, we are 9% affordable housing. Okay. And if you are below 10%, then we are required to produce an affordable housing plan. Okay, so that's part of this, what kicked this into gear for us, where we had to do this. As far as what's affordable, in the affordable housing document, we have if it's owner-occupied versus rent. And so we have in here a breakdown of if there's one person versus all the way up to 8 people and what those numbers are for you, okay? So for example, let's just choose one person for 2018 income limit, $47,400. And then for rent, a one bedroom, $952 per month is what they consider affordable housing. Okay. And so I do want to clarify, you know, this is affordable housing, not low income housing. This is, you know, by these numbers, this is what they define.
And just as a question, with the new building, the Sheridan, that was just built, is that affordable housing?
That is not considered affordable housing per the state, right, Lisa? That was in the calculation of
Sure.
Sheridan because of the type of facility it is.
Sure. So, yeah, David is correct. The state establishes the rental amounts. The state establishes the threshold of what is considered affordable, and it's based on regional income information. And so they set it by owner-occupied structures as well as rental structures. And with my understanding of what the Sheridan is charging tenants, I do not believe that it would be considered affordable.
David, I have one question.
So,
Does the village want to get to 10%? Is that a goal of the village or of the plan?
Everyone has a different number as to what they would like to achieve. We want to be well above 10%. From discussions that we've had with the community, as well as when the trustees reviewed this, 10% should be a minimum. And many believe it should be well above that. So that's difficult to define because everyone has a different opinion of what that number should be and what our goal should be.
Mm-hmm. Just to interject one point on that. So the Affordable Housing Planning and Appeals Act requires certain compulsory components of the plan. And one of the requirements is that the village identify what its affordable housing goal is. And you're given 3 goals from which to choose. One of them being that you'll meet or exceed 10%. Another one I seem to recall, and David, please correct me if I'm wrong, is you would increase it by 3% or some other component. So the goal that was selected by the village was to certainly meet the 10% threshold and then exceed it.
Okay. Thank you.
So how many housing units are there in the village?
We have, let's see here. River Forest provides only 300 affordable of units out of its year-round total number of 3,078. So basically, we are 39 units short of being at 10%.
Okay. So if I charge my children to live there, they would be affordable housing for them.
It depends on how much you charge them, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
but yeah, I do want to just put in context that we're not looking at accessory dwelling units to be the silver bullet that gets us to that 39. We recognize that, but very small. It's a small amount, but you know, every bit counts. So this is, you know, one of many strategies that we have in our plan. So I just don't want to make you know, think that we're looking to get 39 units out of accessory dwelling units, because that's just not going to happen.
Okay, so you told us how this came about.
Yes.
And we appreciate that, sure. Filling in that blank for us.
All right.
Okay. But I think, hang on a second, I think we got some other people that want to talk, and then we'll get back to you.
Dan Lauber.
Thank you. My name is Daniel Lauber. I live at 7215 Oak. I'm a city planner for 40-something years, and my focus is on housing, and I have indeed written a 30-page discussion paper a number of years ago for Hillsborough County, Florida, on accessory dwelling units. First, I'd like to say I agree with everything that Plan Commission Chairman David Crosby said tonight. And I agree very much with what Frank Martin had to say last meeting as well, which amounts to this really needs to have a thorough vetting. We can't really do this on the cheap. There are so many policy decisions that have to be made before anyone can even start drafting an ordinance. You have to decide if the principal dwelling must be owner occupied, or even if both dwellings, neither dwelling has to be owner occupied. How many accessory dwelling units per lot? Would you allow attached or only detached accessory dwelling units? Would you allow accessory dwelling units on non-conforming lots? What's the maximum size of an accessory dwelling unit that would be allowed? Would you allow it on a hotel above a garage if the house, principal house, isn't more than two stories tall? The Evanston guide that I believe may have been distributed to you raises many of these same questions, as well as deals with garage conversions and questions of what about off-street parking? That's just the tip of the iceberg of what needs to be considered when drafting an ADU ordinance. And the answers are out there. It's not going to come from cities in Illinois that have very little experience. As I mentioned last time, there are cities elsewhere in the country that have had 20 and 30 years experience, where we're talking about more than just five or six ADUs over time, where if we have the right research done, we can get the answers that would help you make the policy decisions necessary to be made before an ordinance is drafted. To be perfectly honest, I don't think this should have been sent to the ZBA. This should have been sent to the Plan Commission to do the research, make these policy decisions, and write, through a consultant, I assume, an ordinance, and then send it to the ZBA for approval. This needs to be, again, I stress how strongly this needs to be carefully searched, researched out. The process that we're using, I'm sorry, I've got to object to it. It's what you would expect from a podunk small town in the middle of nowhere. It is not worthy of the process that River Forest should follow do the adequate research. It's crazy. I agree with the people that testified earlier that these very well would be appropriate for what they want to do. I agree with David Crosby that this will make an incremental dent, small dent in the affordable housing issues here, potentially. But there's just so many policy decisions that have to be made. Chairman Martin and ZBA members, I urge you to not leap into this blindly. You do not remotely have the adequate information to make decisions on any of the questions that I raised, any of those policy points. So, you know, we seem to be rushing this through when it warrants careful thought to see what should be allowed and what the actual impacts would be on River Forest. So please, I implore you, slow down, get the adequate research done. Come back, whichever body does it, with a report on the options that we have, the pros and cons of each, and then either ZBA, Plan Commission, or Village Board make the policy decisions before anyone sits down to try to write one word of a zoning amendment. Let's use the right process and we'll get the best result for River Forest. Thank you so much.
Mr. Gilbert?
Yeah, I'll make this quick. Sure. By the way, sorry about my attire. I came straight from work. I happen to love this podunk town, by the way. And I think I do hear you on vetting all those things. Those are good points. But I have heard a lot about affordable housing and not so much on the other side of the coin about current housing and current people that live here and wanting to make improvements to their property. And that's kind of the angle that I think we were just taking is, you know, to your point, we are built out. And so if we wanted to improve on our property, there's only so many things we can do. And we personally feel like that's a small thing that we could do to really raise our property value, our quality of life here with minimal impact on the community. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, board, anybody got anything to think about?
Well, if I could just turn it back over to Jamie. I think she's got a little bit more that she wants to walk through, because I think Dan brought up some good points about key policy decisions, and I think what we're looking for is direction of where we start. I think we're looking for the ZBA to give us some guidance on some of the main issues, and if there's additional information that you need to make that decision or to provide that guidance, we're happy to continue looking into that, but I think we need a place to start.
So as you talk to us again, why don't you tell us what the options are that we should be considering?
Absolutely.
I think there was, I think last time you had a chart that had 8 or 9 options up, and let's make sure
right.
We're
so
all.
Right, so I presented this slide last time to show that there are numerous considerations, but having heard from the community thus far and having an understanding from our discussions with Lisa, we really narrowed it down to about 5 specific topics that we wanted to cover this evening. So Mr. Lauber kind of jumped ahead, and he did mention a few of these, and these are what we want to, which I would like to discuss with you this evening. I also just want to acknowledge my colleague Jake Side is on the Zoom now. So hi, Jake.
Hi, everybody.
I'm glad you could join us. So first, location, we're going to go through that. Which zoning district would be most appropriate for an ADU? Then we're going to talk about the type, attached, detached, internal. And then, of course, occupancy requirements. Should it be owner-occupied, either the primary unit or the accessory dwelling unit, or should there be no requirements on occupancy? We're going to look at parking, and I'm glad we got a bit of a refresher before this on what those parking requirements currently are in the community. And then the final thing I want to talk through is administration. That's exactly how these are going to be permitted. So first topic is location, and I've included the zoning map. The Affordable Housing Plan recommends ADUs in the R1 and R2 districts, but we also wanted to bring up R3 as a potential candidate as well. Currently, there seem to be some townhomes, but there's also existing single-family homes on those lots as well. So Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to you if you wanted to open up the discussion for this topic of the location and which zoning district you feel that ADUs would be appropriate.
Anybody got any comments? And I think we have to be careful, you know, because the village is primarily single-family homes. And I think that the residents and owners have expectations when they are living and owning a single-family home. And, you know, one of those expectations, I think, is that, you know, they're not going to, that they're going to be next to another single family.
Silent.
I'm not sure if you can hear us, but the audio dropped out for the meeting.
And so I think one thing I also want to point out is the last discussion we had was if ADU should be allowed in River Forest. This discussion is how they should be allowed in River Forest. So with the assumption that this is a policy decision going forward, that ADUs is something that is a consideration, if they are to be permitted, how would they be permitted? So I want to make sure that we're not stuck on the if, and we discuss the how. So with this decision point as the type, where and how does River Forest see ADUs fitting on a single family lot?
Where's the stuff on ADUs? Do you got a copy?
I don't, but I can print out a copy. Printing out a copy of my memo.
Two villages okay. There was some copy on. One was
Wilmette. Yeah, there was Wilmette Evanston. I'm still stuck on the if. I'll tell you the truth. I'm sorry, but that's I'm not so sure. This is our position that we should go forward with this. This is something the village should decide.
Well, my point was with this certainly is that Wilmette was only within the dwelling.
Yeah.
So
and family members only.
To my basement.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be an example of a attached or internal.
So is that where this has all gone through this type of thing? Is that a worthy solution to say that this is an accessory dwelling?
It's certainly an option for how you could construct an accessory dwelling unit. Absolutely.
That gets to be the question. Do we need it?
Well, according to your affordable housing plan, it is an opportunity to increase the affordable housing stock.
Certainly a thing, but when we talk about the cost of even doing this, and you bring up a rental level that is probably not going to support, if we put the money in to develop something like this, it has to rent for under $1,000, am I right?
One person.
Well, I think you have to decide, you know, what's our goal? Do we want to have an ADU so it makes it easier for a family to live together, or is what's under discussion an ADU that can be used to meet the Affordable Housing Act? I think there's two different
there's
goals
a
there.
There's a third.
And honestly, you know, I think the intent, I understand there's different intents that you're looking at, but one way or another, if these are approved or not, those intents are all going to be fulfilled with additional housing units coming online.
And there are ways to address concerns through a regulatory structure. Mr. Lauber's right. There's a variety of ways to regulate this. If you want to allow a lot of ADUs, then you would have as few regulations as possible. If you're looking for controlled growth, you would create a regulatory structure that's appropriate for River Forest. And so that's what we're trying to dig into, is what are the main starting points of a regulatory structure that we would be looking at. Now, the ZBA could take the position that no regulation should be allowed. I don't think that's what we're hearing. I think even in the recommendation coming out of the Affordable Housing Plan, there is a recommendation built in there that this be restricted to some degree, that it would only be allowed in the R1 and R2 residential zoning districts. And so that's what we're looking at, is what is the regulatory framework that's right for River Forest? What's right in Wilmette, what's right in Evanston may not be right here. And that's what we're seeking community input on, is what makes this fit for River Forest. You can say it's only in the principal dwelling structure. You can allow it above a garage. You can say it can't be allowed above a garage. It has to be a separate unit. You get to make those choices to right-size this for the community. And those choices aren't carved in stone. To the extent that we find that this is a hurdle or this is too permissive, those things can change over time.
Thank you, Ms. Shiner. And I think, and especially when we come to the discussion about the type attached and detached, one of the assumptions that we have made based on the community is that anything that is built new construction, the architectural design would need to match the principal building. So any addition, or if it was a garage or a coach house that was built, that architectural design would need to be in character with the principal structure. So that's an assumption that we've made. If that helps you visualize potentially an internal versus a, or an attached versus a detached dwelling unit.
So I guess as we consider this too, if we're still hearing, I have some concerns. Let's flush out what some of those concerns are so that we can begin to address them.
Well, let's look at her next item, which is probably the easiest, I think, was parking.
Next, I had occupancy. So if you want to start there, or do you want to skip ahead to parking and come back to occupancy?
I would, if we're going to get into this discussion, I would think that parking, the parking has to comply with the current ordinance, that there's no relief from it for a separate unit.
Right. So as we learned earlier and was reiterated, we heard verbatim what the code was in the R1 and R2 district. Every single family house has to have two covered parking spots. So if you were to put an additional unit in that lot, would you require that they have parking at all? Or would you require at least one uncovered space, so a parking pad? So and it ensures that there is parking available on that lot.
I'd require another covered parking space.
One of the considerations of an additional covered parking space is that financial component. So if someone would want to build an additional ADU.
I'm not worried about financing.
I just want to make sure that I put all the options on the table and all the potential impacts of that.
So Frank, are you saying you would recommend that the village consider requiring one space per ADU and that it be a covered space?
At least one space, depending on the size of it.
Okay.
And it'll be covered. It'd be a garage.
Personally, I just don't have enough information. I saw two plans, one of them from Womack, one from Evanston. Both are only in the last, how many years Evanston has done this?
Evanston has done this, I think, since 2017. They formally legalized their ADUs, but they've
Wilmette's plan has been since 2001.
2001,
okay. And the just attached. Well, it's just a summation of the zoning regulations, not the actual regulations itself.
So I don't feel I have enough information to draw any conclusions whether it should be parked inside, outside, down the street.
Could you be?
Well, River Forest is currently prohibited. So I guess I'm trying to ferret out what information is it that you would like for us to assemble? I would say yes. I would encourage you to consider it regardless of the number of units. Strike that. I think in a town like River Forest, you would see this used modestly. When we take a look at data, we can provide whatever data we need, but when you take a look at data nationally and even regionally, even in a town like, I think it was referenced, Seattle, where they have a very large population, the proportion of units that are created relative to the overall number of properties is relatively small. Even in a community like Wilmette that's had it since 2001 and it's a special use, they've permitted two. I think the point of this, and I think what David said earlier, was that when we're looking at 39 units to get to 10% and then exceed beyond that, every little bit helps. And I say that because I think there's some concern that these could pop up in a lot of places and change the character of the neighborhoods, and I understand that concern, but I don't think that matches what we're seeing. And if we need to provide some additional data talking about what type of activity this generates, we're happy to do that.
I think what one of the things Mr. Lauber said last time was that, you know, we should look at an older, more mature community that's had ADUs. You know, Oak Park has had it for 6 years or 5 years. All right. Evanston's had it for about that period of time. You know, what about some other communities that have had these for 20 years, if there are any?
Those generally not within the Midwest, but there are several studies out from the West Coast, from Oregon, Portland, in particular that has had ADUs permitted for quite some time. But again, as my colleague noted previously, their housing market is vastly different than our housing market out here. So I understand the need for data, but just with the caveat that we might be comparing apples to oranges.
No. That is so inaccurate. I'm sorry, I didn't know my microphone was on. That is bogus.
It's, Dan, we'll call on you sometime later, Dan.
He doesn't know how to use
it. Okay, so Mr. Chair, your recommendation for parking is one coverage space per ADU. Does the other board members, do you all generally agree with that?
I agree with that, although I don't know. I think that this board in particular is probably hesitant because of that issue. If you are living next, you're in a single family home, the whole block is single family, and then all of a sudden you've got two units next to your house that you did not anticipate and did not buy into, essentially. So I think that's the concern. I think the only way for me right now, if I would approve it, if it would be an existing structure, family only, but I would oppose any new structures being built on any single family lots at this point. That would be my position so far.
Excuse me, also we have a lot coverage type of code.
Mm-hmm.
Would be involved also. So adding, which includes parking in terms of like the lot coverage. So now if you're going to put a structure and have covered parking, I would tell you most of the situation would not be allowed. So
you've hit the nail on the head of actually the feasibility of a lot of this. So even as Ms. Shiner pointed out, it would be minimal because based on the different regulations and even each individual lot, even if a homeowner wanted to potentially put in an accessory dwelling unit, they would be restricted based on the existing code and the lot coverage requirements. And
well, they could ask for variation.
They could, but we have the understanding that we want to maintain the existing bulk setback requirements, especially with regard to stormwater management. So we would want to maintain the existing coverage.
And for variation, they would have to prove hardship. And I don't know that wanting to construct an ADU would constitute a hardship under the current zoning ordinance.
So I think, too,
true. That's fair. I can't presume the judgment of the ZBA, but it would be up to you to make a finding of hardship in order to allow the relief.
And I think we also do have to decide, as Mr. Lucchese said, is it worth it for us to go through the whole process?
And this is the right form. I really question if the ZBA is the right form of the value, what the value to the village. And the Planning Commission, I understand, is a lot of work in to go forward with this, but are we really the right format to discuss?
I think they sent it to us to get ideas to prepare to prepare an amendment to the code. Okay, that's the only reason. Usually, somebody else proposes an amendment, and we discuss the amendment.
I think Jake has asked to speak from CMAP, and ready to. Oh, I'm sorry. He's asking that members of the ZBA, our participants over Zoom are asking that ZBA members please speak into the microphone so they can hear.
Okay. So I understand the concerns absolutely, but as CMAP, we've been charged to just understand what your opinions are. Assuming we make this amendment to the code, we're making a little bit of progress, and obviously once we get there, we'll discuss. Once we have a red line version, which is the next step.
I think that one concern that I agree with Mr. Dombrowski is, putting permitting an ADU into a single family zone property could have a deleterious impact on the neighbor.
Certainly. And certainly, you know, the way.
And I'm not real concerned about having given somebody permission to build an ADU because it's going to increase their income. You know, that's nothing that's not very important to me. It's more important to maintain the type of village and the type of living that we have currently, mm-hmm. which is if you live in a single family, there may be several generations of it living there, but that doesn't mean there's going to be multiple housing structures.
Well, I think that's a good segue into the next topic of occupancy. So you talked about multiple generations of housing. So Mr. Bernie, I think you discussed maybe renting out a unit to some of your kids when they're older. I don't want to presume their age, but if you wanted to do that, there could be requirements that you would be required to live or at least own one of the units, and then you would rent out the other unit. So you'd have to occupy either the primary unit or the accessory unit for the accessory unit to be permitted. One thing I do want to note, we talked about some facts as well, and I did talk to a planner in Princeton, New Jersey. Some of the initial conversations we had were about college towns. So Princeton actually boasted in a webinar a few months ago that they have the most progressive and permissive ADU ordinance in the country. They have no restrictions on occupancy, they have no parking requirements, and they previously had occupancy requirements. Last year, they broadened their ordinance, and since they have broadened the ordinance, only two permits have been issued. So in about a year's time, they've issued two. So again, just wanted to speak to the slow incremental impacts. They found that the rate of growth for ADUs for them, because there were occupancy requirements and because there were parking requirements, it just wasn't happening. They weren't developing enough, so they took those away. But again, that incremental approach. So start with potential occupancy requirements, see where that goes.
And that Princeton example is apt, Jamie. Thanks for bringing that up. You know, we've seen so much growth and development in single family housing over the past year due to the pandemic. Everyone's looking for more space to do more things. Princeton is a lot like River Forest in a lot of ways. And I say that as a resident of New Jersey, former resident, I should say. But yeah, that just goes to the very nature of how incremental this type of growth would be, even with you know, all the allowances that Princeton has to allow ADUs throughout the community.
Thanks, Jake.
So if the number of ADUs is so small, even with all these allowances that the municipalities are giving, why are we concerned about it?
It's as an option. It just provides one more avenue, as Mr. Crosby noted. It's just one more avenue as part of this affordable housing approach.
You think these ADUs are going to qualify for affordable housing?
I am not one to presume what the potential rents would be for an ADU. I haven't run a pro forma on any potential ADUs in the community.
There's also options for aging in place that are created through ADUs.
And part of it, too, is that you don't necessarily have to rent it out. It could go to a family member for free, but it's just having that option of having a separate housing unit on your property.
I think that's been contrary to the character of the village. I mean, there are areas where there's multiple family units, there's duplexes, there's a number of different
things. Thank you. I was looking for something else.
I mean, to expand it to the whole village.
There was a statement from the plan commission that I didn't see.
So, in a let's say that it was permitted, and I'm guessing you'd probably want owner occupancy requirements. So if there's a lot of hesitancy here, and I understand that, but we have been charged with understanding your opinion for how these get constructed, not if. And I understand the concerns with that. So hypothetically, if they're permitted, would you require an occupancy requirement? And I'm thinking you're probably leaning towards yes. So more restrictive, more regulations to help regulate these ADUs if they do get constructed. Is that a fair assessment, that you would want to be more conservative in the approach?
Or it doesn't say it's a given thing.
So one of the concerns I've heard tonight is this the appropriate body to consider this? As I noted, this is a place to start. We're looking for direction to begin looking at the regulatory structure that could be appropriate for River Forest. This doesn't mean that the Zoning Board of Appeals is going to be the final say. As we know, any potential text amendments have to be petitioned by the Village Board of Trustees and sent back to the ZBA for public hearing. This is not a public hearing on the matter. There may be additional bodies and additional residents that wish to weigh in on this matter. The Aging in Place Group, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Advisory Group may care to weigh in. And so certainly there would be more opportunity for public discussion. The purpose of the workshop that was identified in the staff memo that was sent to the ZBA a few months ago was that we need a place to start. We need a place to start looking at a regulatory framework. The Zoning Board of Appeals administers, in addition to the zoning administrator, the zoning ordinance, and is the body in this community that is tasked with implementing the land use policy decisions of the village as articulated in the zoning ordinance. Following the workshop, we would be taking these items, particularly these key items, back to the village board for a check-in. Is this what the village board is looking for? They can direct us to go immediately to public hearing. They can direct us to go to talk to different commissions. It's going to be the village board's discretion. The village board has asked that this be sent to the zoning board to look for a regulatory framework. We're going to take it back to the village board. Then a public hearing would be held. We need a place to start. It doesn't mean that the decisions made tonight are the final decisions, but trying to take the temperature of the body that's charged with administering the zoning ordinance and overseeing modifications to the zoning ordinance to understand your concerns, to understand what regulatory issues we may need to look at, that's what we're looking for, is a place to start. Now, we may find that the parking requirement is completely appropriate. The board may say we don't agree with that, and they'll change it. But we, again, we're looking for input so we can begin to drill into a little bit more, how are we going to potentially make this work for River Forest? If you say special use, because what I'm hearing is we want to have some control over this. We want to make sure it doesn't have a negative impact on surrounding property owners. Understood. You control that through the special use process. So when Jamie talked about administration, that's what she's saying. What I'm hearing is we have concerns about parking. So we want it to be, we want to require parking. We want it to be off street. We want it to be covered. Great. That's a great place to start. We have concerns about single family homes being turned into multifamily properties and changing the nature of neighborhoods. And so we understand that. So what we're, I think we're hearing a little bit is certainly the primary structure, the principal structure has to be owner occupied. We're not looking to turn single family homes into multifamily properties. Got it. The zoning districts, we still need a little bit of guidance on that. The Plan Commission said R1, R2. You may disagree. That's okay. We'd like to hear that. And what other category were we looking at? Type, attached or detached. We're hearing we might be a little bit more comfortable with attached inside the principal structure. We understand all of the concerns. And so we're working to address that, but we want to get a sense from you of what those concerns are. Dan is right. There's a lot of issues to dig into. As you saw in some of the Wilmette documents, they have other restrictions. You know, the entrance and exit can't be visible from the street. It has to be in the side or the rear. We're going to get there, but we need to start with the five most basic decision points on ADUs. And I understand the concern too about, should we do this? Ultimately, the village board makes that decision whether or not to actually amend the zoning ordinance.
All right, so I don't think that anything we're talking about is going to impact affordable housing. I mean, to me, that's off the table. So I'd say you can put it in R3 zoning. It's got to be attached, owner-occupied, parking, and a special use, period. That's my input.
And I appreciate your input. Thank you.
And then we'll talk about more restrictions, in the Wilmette one when we're actually presented with an ordinance.
Any other members of the board have any other opinions or comments?
Nothing for me other than what I've already said. I'm good.
Well, I feel like we've made some progress. Oh, yes, sir.
I would like to see more nationally what's available, what other people are doing. I don't want to have to reinvent the wheel myself here. I've got my own opinions as where we should go at ADU, but I don't feel I should represent the whole village as a whole, but I would like to have more information.
Okay.
Yeah, the source of that.
So you're looking for additional ordinances. Do you want the full ordinance or is something like a summation?
A summation is fine.
Okay.
It's fine for me.
Okay, anybody else have anything they want to participate in this workshop this evening?
Dan Lauber has his hand up.
Mr. Lauber?
Hey, thank you. Couple of things. One, I'm glad to see that we're beginning to realize we should learn, not just looking at the ordinances of cities that have had experience, but find out what the impacts have been. You know, has allowing ADUs in single family districts affected the density, affected the nature of the neighborhood? Is there really a need, based on experience, to build another garage space? Because quite honestly, if we require another garage space, that's going to kill off just about any ADU anyone wants to do. We, as I don't know who it was who said it, but one of the key reasons the village is looking at this is so that seniors can add an ADU to their property and the rent from that, the idea is it will enable them to continue to live on their property, or they move into the ADU and they rent out the house. So seniors can age in place. One way to prevent too many developing on a block that could change the character of the neighborhood is frankly to employ a spacing distance, not allow more than require there'd be at least 300 or 400 feet between homes that have an ADU. We do that with group homes. We did it long ago. It was done with gas stations. You could limit it to one or two ADUs on a block face being the two sides of a block. There are all sorts of innovative things that could be done to prevent these from becoming taking over a neighborhood. But the reality, quite honestly, is from the experience I've read about around the country, in a town of River Forest size over maybe a 10-year period, if you get a dozen ADUs, that'd be a lot. So I'm glad to see there's an interest in learning about the experience. I stress not just the ordinances, but the experience of these other cities. There are incubators. Their neighborhoods work the same way our neighborhoods. It doesn't matter if they're on the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean or on Lake Michigan. Neighborhoods work the same way. It's disingenuous to suggest that the housing situation is so different in Oregon or Washington or California than it is here. Frankly, our housing is as expensive on average as it is in those jurisdictions in River Forest. So let's get this research done and identify these impacts before making any decisions or giving any direction for how an ordinance should be written, because we don't have the adequate information. And to repeat the planning adage that is a watchword of the planning profession. The better informed decision makers are, presumably the better decisions they'll make. And I think this board is capable of making very good decisions when provided adequate information on which to base those decisions, rather than what, quite honestly, right now is just instant reaction without having the information. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. All right, anybody else have any direction that we want to give the facilitator this evening? Thank you for coming.
Thank you. And just quickly, do you want to outline our next steps? So we will work with Ms. Shiner, and we will debrief on what we've heard tonight. Mm-hmm. And we will come back, ideally, with a red line ordinance. And again, this is a start.
Well, I think before you spend the time writing an ordinance, you know, you might comply with Mr. Lucchese's request that you give us some other ordinances to look at so that we can communicate things to you rather than just respond to what you think we should have to look at.
So why don't we regroup?
Yeah.
And we will come back in the future. And I would say the near future. I don't know if the ZBA is going to meet in July or not. And the board is on a summer meeting schedule. So I appreciate the feedback. I appreciate the request for information. It gives us a place to start.
Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so before we adjourn, I want to make note that this is Mr. Burney's last meeting. He has indicated that because of his old age, he's getting ready to retire from this. So David's been here a long time, longer than Ron or Jerry, and I appreciate all the help and the wisdom you've given us for a long time, David.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay. So somebody want to? Okay. So we talk about our next meeting.
Yeah. Do we have any zoning variation applications?
No.
Nothing's in the hopper at the moment.
Okay. And they would have to come in.
It's too late.
Pretty soon. Yeah, it's not already. Okay, got it. So I don't anticipate a ZBA meeting in July. Okay. We can regroup and
If we talk about doing it in August, then it might give the consultant an opportunity, you know, to gather some of this information that we've asked for and to circulate it well before the next meeting so that we have time to look at it.
That's fair.
Okay, we got a motion to dismiss.
I'll make that. Nope.
All right. All right. Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, everybody.